So firstly, Dan, if you're happy to tell us your thoughts about being appointed as the new deputy leader of the Conservative group in Tameside.
Firstly, it's a real honour to be appointed, to be asked to take that role. Obviously, we're a small group, but it still is a big responsibility to be part of the leadership of that group. And I'm really happy to be asked. It's bittersweet because obviously we lost Councillor Welsh, who was our deputy leader in the elections. I would much rather not be the deputy and still have Ruth with us, to be honest. So, as I say, that does make it bittersweet, but equally happy to step up and very honoured to be asked to do that. And I hope that I can do nearly as good a job as Ruth. Time will tell, but certainly big shoes to fill.
How do you go about following Ruth's footsteps now?
So I think there are two bits to it, right? One of the great things that Ruth brought was years of experience as a councillor, but also years of experience in the political arena. So outside of being a councillor, Ruth's day job is in politics. So a huge amount of knowledge, huge amount of contacts, and you know, a great ability to get things done, and also quite a sensible level head in discussions, which is good. So there's a lot of great things to follow and aspire to. But I think as well, whenever you take on a position like this, it isn't just about doing what the other person did. You have to bring your own kind of brand to it and bring your own skills and capabilities and everything else. So I think a little bit of both. If I can bring the same level of benefit to the group that Ruth brought, or even nearly the same level, I'll be happy. But you know, I know from having worked together, we have different styles. We agree on a lot of things, but we disagree on some things, right? And that's the way any group works. You know, if you draw the Venn diagram, we're probably 80% overlapped, but there's that 20% of things that I see a little bit differently, and that's what I'll bring to the role, I guess.
And are you looking forward to working closely with Doreen as well?
Yeah, I am. And as I say, we're a small group, so we all work closely together anyway. We don't have that kind of separation that you might see in a much bigger group of the, you know, the leadership team and the rest of the group. There were only six of us now. There were eight of us before, so it still wasn't a huge group. So we've always been quite a close-knit team. So that probably won't change really in terms of us working closely together. We always have. I think one of the exciting things for me as an Ashton councillor is that this is the first time, certainly that I can remember, that we've had a Conservative from Ashton as part of the group leadership. That's largely because we very rarely had councillors from Ashton. So you know, that's good. But I think it's good that we see a contribution from across the borough, not just concentrated in one area of the borough. So yeah, I think it'll be good.
And for those who don't know, how were you appointed to the role? What was the process behind the appointment?
So in the Conservative Party rules, the group elects a leader. So it, from the group, the six of us now, someone will nominate someone to be a leader. Someone will second that. If we get more than one nomination to be leader, there's a vote. Obviously, that's all secret. We do that as a group. Then the leader themselves appoints a deputy. So the deputy isn't elected in the Conservative Party, but the leader is, and then it's an appointment. So when Doreen was elected, and I can share that Doreen stood unchallenged to be the leader and was unanimously elected, then Doreen's decision was to appoint me as deputy.
And you mentioned before about the fact that you've lost two seats from the election results. So you now have six in total. So given that position, people might think, like, how effective an opposition do you think you can provide to the Labour Council?
I don't think much changes in that sense. So firstly, it's really disappointing to lose colleagues. I know how hard people work, and I know how disappointing it is to work that hard and then lose your seat. And obviously, one of the people that we lost was my ward colleague, Councillor Turner. So we worked probably more closely together than I've worked with anybody else because we're in the same ward. So I can vouch for the efforts that she made, right? And it's sad to see that happen. We were really close to losing another one. We kept Godley by one on the drawing of lots. so it was a tough night for us. There's no doubt about that. In terms of how effective an opposition we can be, I think in the end, we've always been a small group, right? We've always been a small opposition. So when I was elected in 2021, we went from 5 to 6. Then 2022, we went from 6 to 8. And now we've dropped back a little bit. So we've always, if you look at it just in pure numbers, right, and you look at a vote in the chamber, we're very unlikely to have a big impact in terms of the decisions. I think the way we provide effective opposition is holding the council to account, and is through providing really good, well thought out scrutiny. You know, and you'll have seen us, you know, call out things, the big things that people have seen on Godley Green, and the way we've held the council to account on things like children's services. And those things are improving. And I think that's it. The role of opposition is to provide that scrutiny. But it's, and I said this in an interview with Lee a couple of years ago about children's services. It isn't just to kind of shout the odds and criticize. It's to, for the sake of it, it's to be a critical friend, right? In the end, we all want the council to be as good as it can be for the good of our residents. So actually that opposition isn't necessarily saying everything you do is terrible and it's all going to change. It's about saying, look, these bits, fair enough. These bits we disagree with, here's what we would do differently. And I think the thing that people have to remember is what you see a lot of in politics, nationally or locally, right? You see the set pieces, you see the council meetings, you see the debates in parliament and whatever else. And they are set pieces, right? They are theatre. And it's where people make their positions clear and we talk through the headlines and everything else. But actually, a lot of politics is done in committee. A lot of politics is done in, you know, one-to-one conversations, and that's, you know, with both councillors and with officers or, you know, or civil servants. And that's, I think, where a lot of change happens. So a lot of the day-to-day things that make people's lives better, so bin collections, potholes, etc., they aren't the things that get debated in the chamber. They aren't the things you see people arguing about in the media, but they're the things that all the councillors, you know, from whatever party are working hard on with each other and with the officers day after day to provide the best service. So I think, you know, back to the question, how do we provide a good opposition? Through that scrutiny, through being clear about what we agree with and what we don't, and hopefully through providing suggestions that can be taken on, but being willing to work with the council or the ruling group of the council to provide the best solutions.
You mentioned there some of the issues that local councillors are sort of appointed to deal with. So given that, quite disappointing for you that perhaps maybe some people I've looked at the national picture when voting in the local elections.
It is, and it always is, but it's part of what you have to accept, that that's just what happens, because it is, right? Everywhere, that's what happens, because the national picture is what people see every day on the news, on social media, on whatever else. More often than not, the biggest issues that people think about and face day to day or have the biggest opinions about are national issues. So, you know, that is going to sway the way people think, right? If you look at the whole period of time that we were doing Brexit, right, the whole debate around Brexit massively affected local elections. No council has any control over Brexit. So that's just one example. So it's frustrating, but you have to accept that it happens. And then the way you kind of interact with that, in my opinion, is to go out and make that clear to people. And that's about engaging with residents. It's about being on the doorstep. It's about going to community events and whatever, and making that clear. So A, you know, you're electing a council and these are the things that your council can control. You know, these are, you know, the things you're talking about are national issues, which won't change at all based on the makeup of the council. So trying to help people to understand that and make that separation. But I think also being willing to listen, right? And saying, hey, tell us what frustrates you about in the current case, the Conservative government. And yeah, we can try our best to feed that back to the party. Again, we're not, you know, we have no influence over the government, but we can try our best to, you know, and if you're getting that feedback on a national scale, constantly fed back up into the party, if you like, then perhaps you see a change. So, but I think, yeah, I think separating the two things out is important, but it's hard to do. I understand why people don't, but I think that's our job to help them, if you like.
And turnout was just 28% in Tameside for the local elections. Do you think there's anything that can be done to sort of improve that going forward?
Yeah, and that's, I'm glad you've mentioned that, because I think that's the biggest takeaway. We can talk about the disappointment at losing seats for our party, and that is obviously true, and the sadness at losing colleagues. But I look at the whole thing, and the thing I'm most disappointed at is the turnout. And effectively, that's a plague on all our houses, right? That says, for whatever reason, we as a political collective in Tameside have managed to turn people off to the point that only just over one in four people want to vote. That's poor, right? So right now, I don't know what we do about it, but we need to figure out what we do about it. And again, I think a lot of it will come from engagement. And that's on all of us from all parties to be out there talking to our residents. And talking to our residents means trying our best to talk to all of our residents. So it's no good me walking around all the houses of people that I know vote Conservative or have told me in the past vote Conservative and saying, hey, what do you think, right? And it's also, by the way, no good me going to people's houses that I know vote Labour. It's actually engaging across the board and saying the vast majority of people don't vote at all, right? 28%, which means 7 in 10 people didn't vote, more than 7 in 10, but call it 7 in 10. So actually, the three that voted, either voted Tory or Labour or whatever else, fine. And yet we listen to them, absolutely, and we're grateful for the people who voted for us. But actually, all of us need to be out talking to the other seven, right? And saying, regardless of how you would have voted, help us understand why you're disengaged. Help us understand what we need to do to get you back engaged, to have your say, whether you agree with my politics or not, whether you want to vote for me or not, what is it that's missing for you to have that interest to actually have your say and take part in the democratic process locally.
And do you think anything has to change in terms of the voting system as well and going forward into that? So the general election next year, we currently have first past the post. Would you like to see anything else change, like to voter representation or any change around the photo ID, which of course was a big thing at these elections locally as well?
Absolutely not, if I'm honest. I think I'm a big proponent of first past the post as an electoral system. I think it's clean. I think it gives you a clear outcome. It isn't perfect, but none of them are perfect. And I remember, I studied politics at A-level, and I remember the first thing, so I would have been like 16, 17, at the time, the first module was all about electoral systems. And obviously at that point, you don't know anything about other systems. You don't know other systems exist. And one of the things that I remember was a kind of a class debate around all the different systems. And the thing that became clear to me was that every system has its pros and cons, like anything in life, right? All these systems have pros and cons, none are perfect. So actually, what is it you're trying to achieve? And ultimately for me, what works in the UK, whether you agree with the government that's elected or not, one of the things that we know is effective is having a government or a party that can form a government. That's what works for us. In other areas of the world, you know, a big parliamentary coalition works. My personal view is coalitions tend not to get very much done. And what first past the post gives you is a winner. It's that side or it's that side. And they get to implement their manifesto because they've got a majority in parliament. You might not agree with their manifesto, and that's fine. You can vote for the other side. But in the end, the party with the most votes wins and gets to implement its plan. And I think that's, for me, that's probably the fairest way to do it. So I don't think it needs to change. I can see the arguments that people make and I can see the imperfections. But in the end, I think it's the least worst option, if you like. You mentioned photo ID. I can't see a problem with it myself. You know, again, you'll have heard all the arguments. I need photo ID someday to take an Amazon delivery of a person who comes to my house to give it to me, right? Most people have got photo ID. Those who haven't can get it for free from the government. I can't see why it's a problem for anybody. It exists in lots of other areas. Northern Ireland have had it for much longer than we have. Obviously, this was the first year we've had it, and it doesn't seem to create a problem there. So I think that's fine, and I think it makes sense. I also think that probably needs to go a little bit further, and I understand there's legislation on it. Again, it being a government thing, I'm not involved, around some sort of verification for postal votes, and I think that will come in as well. Ultimately, you know, if you kind of step back and think about it, the idea that we should create a system in which we can be sure that people who have got the right to vote are the people casting the votes can't be a bad thing. I don't understand how it can be.
And sort of following on for the elections then, how do the Conservatives go about sort of rebuilding in Tameside and sort of to go again?
Yeah, another good question. And it in a way, it's similar to the answer for turnout, right? And it's sort of the same issue. What was it about us this year, particularly after two good years where we've increased our stake in the council, if you like? How do we go out and attract our voters again? What you tend to find, not 100% of the time, but what you tend to find is where there's a swing like this, very few people change their minds generally, right? People have an ideology. People, you know, I will nearly always vote Conservative, right? I'm very unlikely to vote for anybody else. But what you find is people either vote or don't vote rather than change their minds, right? And that's what you see. You see reduced turnout and you see the fact that we've got less votes, right, and less seats, and so on. And it's the same either way. You tend to find that where things swing, it's because voters stay at home rather than voting differently. There are a portion of the population that are swing voters, 100%, that they exist. But So the question is, why did Conservative voters stay at home? And that's what we need to answer. And we need to answer that by finding out, by asking the question. And not only asking the question, but being prepared to listen to the answer and really take the answer on board. And that can be really difficult sometimes. And it can be easy to make excuses, and it can be easy to dismiss and say, oh yeah, well, that's national, whatever, right? And if that's the answer, if in theory we were able to talk to all the people who would have voted Conservative but stayed at home, and if they all say to us it's national issues, right, then the solution for me is that we say, we didn't do a good enough job in helping people to understand the importance of this in terms of what happens locally versus what happens nationally. Yeah. And one of my big frustrations with politicians of all parties is the kind of making of excuses and kind of saying, oh yeah, but people don't understand. Okay, fine, people don't understand. Then what did you do to help them understand? Well, what role did you play in helping to improve the situation versus complaining about the outcome? So we need to go out and listen, and then we need to, based on what we've heard, we need to put together a plan that takes all of that feedback into account. But we need to be honest, we need to be humble, and we need to be open to the feedback and not just kind of brush it off. And that's the only thing you can do when you have a result as disappointing as this. The only thing you can do is go and listen.
And just finally, I wanted to ask as well, if the Conservatives had more control of the local authority, what as a group and you personally would you like to see change in Tameside?
So I think I would like us to improve the state of our town centres. And that's across the borough. Obviously, you know, for me as an Ashton councillor, Ashton is my town centre. But we have 9 town centres across the borough, which I get as a lot. And they're all different. They all have all in very different settings. And obviously they all have a slightly different character. So really developing our town centres in a way that makes the most of what they have about them, right? Their individual characteristics. I think what you get when you do that is greater community pride and greater civic pride. I think that's one thing that's missing. The obvious thing we would say, we would like to lower council tax, or at least freeze council tax. We've said this year on year. My personal view is that council tax is too high. And if you look at across the country, Conservative councils provide services for less council tax. So that's one of the things we would look at. And I think making sure services are up to scratch. So really getting the basics right. You know, and it comes down to, I've said it before, right? Things like potholes, things like bins, day-to-day stuff, that the more those things can run like clockwork, so they don't take up time at a management level in the council, the more management time there will be. And I mean management both on the kind of officer civil service side, but also on the council leadership side, the more resource can be dedicated to the big strategic things that are going to really make a difference to our borough, right? So really getting the basics in place so that you don't have to deal with them, because they run and they're great. You know, everyone's bin gets collected when it should, and that's fine. You know, potholes and so on. And then really focusing on the things that are going to help move the borough forward. I think, as I said, town centres is a key one. But ultimately, we've got to, and I think town centres is the key to doing this, we've got to drive growth in our borough. If you look at the 10 boroughs in Greater Manchester, Tameside is, since we've started measuring sort of economic growth, Tameside is the worst one. It has 8% growth in the time since this measurement began, which is about 20 years or so, right? The next worst is Rochdale at 23%. So the next worst is 3 times as much as Tameside, right? And this is where it can get political, and people will start to say, yeah, but government cuts, yeah, but this, yeah, but that. All 10 of those boroughs have grown at whatever rate during the same time under the same government, right? So it's not about comparing what Tameside has done now versus what it did before a Tory government or whatever else. It's about saying, look, during the same period of time in the same region and under the same government, Rochdale has grown by 3 times as much as Tameside, and every other borough, by the way, by even more than that. Why? And all right, if you look at the whole thing, you look at Manchester City Council and say, well, they've grown by 80%. Fine, that's the city centre. That's a little bit different. But Rochdale's no different. Wigan's no different, right? So we need to understand what it is about Tameside specifically that is holding us back, and really go after it and attack it so that we can provide good jobs We have people, therefore, who are earning good incomes locally, and you know, and we attract people to the borough, because if you increase, you know, the number of people who have good jobs in the borough, you increase your council tax base, then that's the mechanism that allows you to reduce council tax for every individual, because you've got more individuals paying into the pot.
Well, Councillor Dan Casello, thanks very much for your time. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Pleasure.